Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 12th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author, educator, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So, climate change is an issue that has is well known for touching many, many things. I mean, climate change affects so many different aspects of our lives that we don't even appreciate it. It's sometimes useful to come back around and just kind of savor the idea that there is almost no topic in the world that is not connected to climate change at some level. And I think that that we can review a few of those. I mean, at a top level, there was a report from the Federal Reserve Bank, a researcher for the Federal Reserve Bank, basically making the point to the bankers of the U.S. government that climate change is an issue that will present itself as a risk for the guys that set the interest rates. Right? So you wouldn't think to first order that the Federal Reserve really would have to care too much about climate change, but they're beginning to recognize that the effects, the shocks of large weather events and people planning for downstream events will affect interest rates. And it's just an interesting thing. In fact, they went so far as to say that climate change could cause another financial crisis, I guess sort of on the scale of 2008, right? Which is just a lot. It seems at first glance a long reach, but it suggests the way that climate issues work their way into all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah, I saw that article too from the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, and the researcher found that basically climate-related financial risks can affect the economy through elevated credit spreads, greater precautionary savings, and then eventually possibly a financial crisis. Mm-hmm. My favorite expert on this is Jeremy Grantham. He was the one who famously predicted the 2008 credit crisis, bubble that popped. And there's a Barron's interview with him where he talks about climate change being the single most important issue for the next 50 years, as far as the eye can see, he says, as the top risk for investors. And basically says that, decarbonizing the economy is every single piece of our economy is going to start shifting towards decarbonized, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. great, right? We hope for that. Right. And that, if the companies that sort of see the writing on the wall and understand the speed at which everything's going are the companies that are going to win, and those who deny it and keep doing what the fossil fuel companies are going to do are going to lose. They're going to be out of business. And so, you think about that and then you kind of extrapolate and think, oh, well, the United States currently, won't even allow the word climate change to be in some of its government literature. So what is that writing on the wall?
Right. Let's just hope we're all still in business here.
Right.
I think that it's climate change sneaking into boardrooms and these high level investment decisions, because I think you're right. Those guys can see the handwriting on the wall, that the ship is slowly turning and this decarbonization is going to happen one way or another, and that it's best to get on board. I mean, I saw something that said the other kind of weird connection is that the United States military is certainly planning for climate change and is currently facing a bunch of issues at the Newport Naval Yards, Newport News, right? That basically they're...
And Norfolk too, right?
Yeah. Well, those places in Virginia, there's a bunch of, right. huge naval bases in Virginia, which of course, by definition, right on the sea level, are susceptible to sea level rise, right? And there's a lot of money tied up there.
Right. Wasn't there, I forget what kind of, exactly what sort of military planes there were, but weren't there these planes that were destroyed and they're worth millions and millions of dollars for each plane? Yeah,
right.
Billions.
There,
and they were
the last Hurricane
by...
Michael down there in Florida, right? It ripped through an Air Force base, and there is a bunch of planes that I think were on the order of $1 billion apiece, right? It might be $700 million or whatever, but it just, these planes are destroyed, dead on the ground, and not even shot down by any bad guys, right? It's just, so I don't know.
Yeah, you know, but I on the flip side of that, I also read an article about Amazon that where they have made some ambitious sort of climate targets in the past and do not seem to be moving in any way, shape, or form toward those, and in fact seem to be doing more investments with the oil and gas companies. So, you know, you're saying that are these things creeping into the boardrooms? Well, I don't know that they are across the entire spectrum of businesses.
Yeah, I saw something where right, Google, for all of its happy talk about not being evil, is in a sense is essentially courting the oil majors, the big oil companies, to utilize the artificial intelligence stuff, right, and to sign up with Google to search out more oil. I mean, it always strikes me as so bizarre that there's already enough oil identified in reserve, right, still in the ground, but already identified to basically blast through any kind of carbon budget, any kind of allowed level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, right? So what we already know about, we've already identified. If we burned all that, we're already way past any sort of sensible planet. And these guys are still figuring out new ways to find more oil, right?
Right.
It's like having 10,000 nuclear bombs to make the rubble bounce, right? You just keep exploding bombs and it's not doing anything. And these guys keep searching for new oil, right?
I mean, their stocks are valued on the sort of the amount of oil that is available, right? And if we burn that oil, as you said, we're toast our planet. So basically, their stocks are valued on something that we can't actually use.
Right.
So there is this sort of funny, it's puzzling to me why we aren't, why there isn't more greater concern about getting all of our stocks out of there. I mean, I guess, I don't fully know how all of these pieces work together, but is it possible that sort of these Google and Amazon companies are like, well, we're just going to keep riding it until... I don't know what happens.
I think it's short-termism.
Gonna...
I mean, those guys, once you become a public company, all you're worried about is the next quarterly returns, right? All you have to do is maximize that. And so they have no vision for a long-term vision for anything. I mean, it's just what maximizes the returns in this quarter. And I think we put up a show about it, but there was at some point there was a thing about, the danger of short-termism as a philosophy of life, and that we should be looking at a much longer term. Oh, that's right. It was a show we talked about how the year 2100 ought to be, the coming century, the century mark of the year 2100 should in fact be called 0-2100. Because you can assume there's going to be a year 10,000, right? It's not that far away. I mean, you can conceive of it, and we somehow count. We don't look forward. We don't say, we don't build that into our current thinking because we don't even number it. We don't give it a name.
But, when they're sort of planning things down the pipeline, of course there's long-termism. So there is some aspect of long-termism that all of these companies are thinking about, right? They're looking out, toward what products are we going to start developing now so they're in place in 10 years and have a good market share?
Good point. I mean, excellent point. So, the New Yorker article on ExxonMobil said that whenever they put a well into the ground, they have a 40-year plan for it.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're thinking that kind of scale.
Yeah, right. Well, I like to think so. There obviously a paradigm shift is, needed. We know that. But, I am heartened by a lot of the upcoming candidates who are really starting to make climate change a platform for, the next election, and how critical it is that we start doing something about it. And I think back to a saying that has held for a long time, right? It's from the Clinton campaign where they said it's the economy, stupid.
Right.
It was sort of their, like, that's what we should focus on. And now I think we can switch and start saying it's the climate, stupid. You know, we all should be thinking about this and retooling our business plans and our business designs in such a way that both for the economic success really of our business, but also for the, you know, success of our existence on this planet as a whole.
Well, I think it's retooling the societal cultural way of thinking about the world, right? Is that we have to, all that's going to shift. I mean, there were discussions about how big a shift the Green New Deal is, and so I was listening to some show about modern monetary theory, right? So MMT, modern monetary theory, is this idea of money supply and a fiscal theory that in many ways is a get out of jail card for the Green New Deal, because it says you can spend all the money you want, right? You could spend $1 trillion on clean energy and you would be paid back. It would not destroy the economy, right? And of course everyone gets upset about that, but I mean, it requires a big shift. And one of the things they were saying is fundamental to this modern monetary theory is the following idea, which is that the way we structure the economy now, we talk about full employment at 4% unemployment, right? So that our economy is built on the idea that 4% of the people are going to be unemployed, right? And that's like the human suffering designed into the way we have the economy. And when the inflation rate goes up, when things start to go bad, what do? They raise the interest rates in order to basically lay more people off, right? So the unemployed people are used as a buffer to manage the economy and keep inflation stable. And what the modern monetary theory people say, and I'm going to badly hack it, so, but basically saying that you need full employment, right? And you have this buffer of people that you're using to manage the economy. I guess I can't explain it, but they need to be employed so they have a living wage. And that's just, I mean, that's such a deeply fundamental shift in the way we think about the world. I never realized it before, but the way the US economy works, it assumes you're going to have people out of work, and in fact you're going to drive that number up if inflation starts or something, and that's how you manage the economy. And I say, well, like, wow, when you think of it that way, that's really very cruel. So
Yeah,
that's
sounds
kind of
like
a detour, but I mean that all this stuff is connected.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an economy that's almost as broken as our climate, right?
Yes.
I mean, when you look
Yeah.
at it that way.
Well, I think that, so let me say one other thing that I want to mention to folks that's coming up. So this is now mid-April. At the end of April, on April 27th, that's a Saturday, mark your calendar, because there's something called the Local Environmental Action Conference, which will be held at Worcester State University. All right, so this is an annual conference that MCAN sponsors, along with the Toxic Action Center, and it is a great opportunity to meet other climate hawks, to do all the right stuff. And it's on April 27th. I was got it somewhere in front of me. Yeah, here we go. Some of the workshops that are going to be in that conference are quite interesting. So if you're listening to this podcast, you might want to learn about things like how to do digital organizing. So there's a workshop on that. How to work towards a just transition. How to set up a winning campaign in your town. Organizing your community 101. Sealing the Green New Deal. There's a session on transportation and the climate initiative, about making buildings better, about how to. So there's this concept, if you live in a town and you don't know where to start in terms of climate action, MCAN offers a very simple checklist to sort of look around your town and say, oh, and figure out where you stand in the context of things and suggest actions that you can begin to take no matter where you are on the spectrum. Right? So that's going to be one of the topics. It's quite interesting for people. There's be a session on how to build effective relationships with your local officials. Right? So if you're in a town and you want to get something done, it's very important to be able to talk to the people who are running the town, and there's a workshop on how to do that. There's a workshop on how to get money, how to make grant applications for small grants for local local action. So there's a lot of great stuff at the upcoming Local Environmental Action Conference. It's April 27th. That's a Saturday. Registration is open. It's designed to be inexpensive so that people can get to it. I would urge you to consider going to it. I'm going to be there. I'll be stomping around saying hello to people in the certainly in the registration line. Come by and say hello. We'd love to talk to you. But it's a great conference where you can meet, learn stuff, and meet other climate hawks.
Right? And just to jump in, I've gone to the conference the past couple of years, and the speakers, they always have these speakers who, by the end of their talk, everyone's on their feet. I mean, they're just really, really phenomenal. What was the – they had one who Lori – I forget her name, Lori. She was the Aaron Brockovich, like the actual person.
The lawyer,
from, right, that dealt with all of the you know, the – was it climate – sorry, cancer clusters.
The Love Canal guy.
The Love Canal. Yeah.
Well, this year it's going to be Sandra Steingraber, who's a biologist, author, and cancer survivor. She's going to be speaking. It's, again, a great keynote speaker. So there you go. If you can make it, it's a good thing to do. So we'll put up links to that and some of the other stuff that we talked about tonight, all the interconnections and how to – it's the climate stupid kind of stuff. We'll put up links to that on the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. We're on Facebook. It's /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, any of the standard podcast apps. And, of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. If you want, please send a letter to let us know what you think, what we ought to talk about, stuff like that, to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'd love to hear from you. So we're going to close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, using regulation, investments, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.